At the top of the page, I quoted, this is what you heard at your diaconate ordination, this particular phrase. And I've been to two diaconate ordinations in the last couple of weeks, and this line has stuck out to me both times. And it's interesting now, as the Archbishop's secretary, in a certain sense, a lot more of my duties are diaconal duties. I serve at liturgy in a very similar way that a deacon might serve at the liturgy. And there's supposed to be, historically, there's this deep bond between the deacon and the bishop. Prior to there being much of a presbyterate, there was always deacons with their bishops. And so in a certain sense, I serve now in a much more diaconal role. And so I was paying very close attention to the words of the diaconal ordinations, and this line really stuck out to me. Excel in every virtue, in love that is sincere, in concern for the sick and the poor, in unassuming authority, in self-discipline, and in holiness of life. That's a high call. but I especially love this phrase, unassuming authority. I know as a deacon you probably feel like you have no authority in your parish. That might exactly be the case. That we should carry ourselves, though, with an unassuming authority. And as I talked with the Archbishop, you know, the Archbishop gave his talk to you this morning kind of on the deacon's role in the church. In particular, I know he wanted to talk a little bit about the role in the liturgy. He wanted me to follow up with the practicals. So my version of the talk is going to be the most boring of the day. I'm going to keep it short. This is going to be a very practical discussion. We're just going to walk through the liturgy. But as I talk with the Archbishop, I can tell one thing that he really wants from his deacons serving at liturgies with him is this unassuming authority. The sense that this is my parish, this is my sanctuary in a certain sense, and to kind of run the show a little bit. Now, he goes with an MC. Archbishop will always have an MC when he comes. And, of course, the MC also helps to keep things moving. I think the MC's job is to make everybody look good, especially the Archbishop. You guys included. We want to make sure that the deacons look good as well up there. But he definitely wants his deacons to have a certain authority in the sanctuary, help keep things moving, keeping servers moving, and to really know what they're doing. And you guys have been deacons longer than I've been ordained a priest, I'm sure. Most of you have, at least. And so I feel funny giving you this particular talk, because you probably know the liturgy better than I do. I'm sure that you've read the germ a couple of times. I hope that you have. You know, I read... I have this love for the general instruction of the Liturgy of the Hours. I don't know why. It's weird. Every couple of years when we get out Volume 1 of the Liturgy of the Hours, it has the general instruction, and I read it. And I love it because it blends the spirituality of the Liturgy of the Hours with the practicals, with the rubrics. And you can see how the Liturgy of the Hours was shaped to bring about the spirituality of praying the psalms. And I find it really beautiful. And I also learn something new every time. I've been praying the Liturgy of the Hours for years. I've been reading the general instruction of it for a few times. And finally, a year ago, I noticed this one little sentence that said that I didn't have to say the antiphon after every stanza during the invitatory. Are you kidding me? This is great. And I hated flipping back and forth. The other day, for the first time in a year, I did it. I did flip back and forth. And I was like, that was a little sentence. Like, I had read the general instruction a few times and had never noticed that little thing. And it was very helpful in a practical way. But it's also good to kind of re-enter again into the spirituality of the Liturgy of the Hours. I know that the Archbishop's hope is that you're very familiar with the general instruction of the Roman Missal in particular. Today I'm going to walk through some things with the liturgy. Most of this, hopefully almost all of it, is taken from the general instruction. The Archbishop had given me 10 pages of general instruction paragraphs that he wanted me to give to you all. I have condensed it into 3 pages here, minus all of the references. But his big encouragement is, please read the general instruction. There's a whole section on Mass with a deacon. And so just to really familiarize yourself with that. So I've put this together with the Archbishop's input, with John Miller's input from the liturgy office, and this is my own. And we also have Deacon Don, Deacon Rob. If Deacon Chuck is here, then I'm sure there's other people who could add to this. Some of this is going to be somewhat particular to Archbishop Aquila, but a lot of this is just general. This is the usual stuff. So please forgive me if you find this a little offensive that I walk through the whole liturgy and some of the rubrics that you already know. Maybe you'll find something in here that you hadn't thought of before. I noticed when I became a priest, I no longer watched anybody else celebrate Mass. As a seminarian, we become, I don't know what the word is, we become very critical of priests in the way that they celebrate Masses. I'll never hold my hands like that, and I'll never sing it like that. And we have all of these ideas of who's doing what right and who's doing what wrong. And then we get ordained, and we never watch anybody else celebrate Mass but ourselves. And it's easy to kind of forget about certain things. And just a few weeks ago, I realized that I wasn't bringing my hands together at a time that I was supposed to be bringing my hands together. I'm like, wow, I hadn't had anybody point that out to me. And so now, as the Archbishop's MC, I do get to see the Archbishop celebrate Mass quite often. And I learn things from watching him. And so I don't know how much you ever get feedback from your pastors. Some of you have pastors who are going to give you feedback every weekend on how you did. But then there's going to be, in some places, you don't get any feedback on how you're doing, what could you change. And so I just kind of want to walk through it all, and hopefully we can glean something from it. So beginning with, again, this is particular with Mass with the Archbishop. When processing into the church, remember that if there's two deacons, then one is holding the book of the Gospels, the other one is accompanying the Archbishop or the celebrant. The book of the Gospels comes in after the altar servers, before the rest of the clergy. And the deacon of the Eucharist would accompany the Archbishop to his right side. And Archbishop Aquila asks, the germ is kind of ambiguous. It just says, walks alongside the Archbishop or the celebrant. And so Archbishop says, please be a step behind. He says so that the view of the Archbishop from the faithful is not obscured. And so normally the MC will walk in alongside you, side by side behind the Archbishop. Archbishop will come into the sanctuary, he'll take off his mitre, he'll hand off his crozier, and oftentimes when he goes to parishes, there's incense. You may not use incense at your parish, but if ever you're at a Mass with the incense, ask the MC before Mass if you should accompany the Archbishop around the altar. It depends. We kind of go back and forth, it seems like, at the cathedral. Sometimes the deacon accompanies the Archbishop, sometimes he doesn't. Partly because Archbishop clipped along quite quickly around that altar. And so his only request is if the deacon's going to accompany him, or both of the deacons accompany him, that they move it. And so that they keep the pace going. Just remember that he is going to stop when he passes by the crucifix. Yes, deacon.
If there are two deacons, does one lead and one...
One lead and one follows, precisely. Yep. He'll stop at the crucifix. Normally when the Archbishop comes... he comes with his metropolitan cross, so he's got a special processional cross that is brought when the Archbishop comes. And so that will normally be set on the front left side of the altar, just like it is in the cathedral. So normally he'll stop and incense it there. But if your parish has a very noticeable crucifix in the sanctuary, a really big one, then we may just put the cross off to the side, and he'll incense the big one on the wall. The penitential rite. The Archbishop is always making sure that we ask the deacon 15 seconds of silence. Let us call to mind our sins and so prepare ourselves to celebrate the sacred mysteries. And I've seen this happen a number of times where, and maybe it's out of nervousness, the deacon just right away goes into the penitential rite. We haven't had any time to call to mind our sins. So the Archbishop just wants to make sure that there is a deliberate time, 15 seconds. It's funny, the other day I told Deacon Schaefer this at the cathedral, and I said, 15 seconds, you know, don't start it until then. And then the Archbishop starts the confidier because he felt like it was a second too long. So I can't read his mind. But normally that's the standard, and I try to remind the Archbishop. Generally, if he has a deacon, he wants the deacon to do the penitential rite. It's rare that he'll want to do the confiteor. And the Archbishop wants to make sure that you remember to not make up your own penitential rite. You've got the three intercessions, you know. You were sent to heal the contrite of heart, Lord have mercy, you came to call sinners. Just to make sure that you know the current translation of it, especially for those who were ordained years ago. It might be hard because we got a new translation, it's kind of similar to the old one. Just to make sure that you really are using the one that's in the book. And there are lots of options. If you look at Appendix 6 at the back of the Roman Missal, there's lots of different options. The Archbishop just asked, if you're going to use a different one, make sure that you're using one that's actually from the book. When we get to the gospel, as soon as the Alleluia, when the A word song starts up, please make sure that you stand up. So the whole community stands up. The Archbishop is going to remain seated, though, for both the filling the incense and for the deacon to receive the blessing. So just because the deacon is, the Archbishop is seated, doesn't mean that you also stay seated. Please stand right away at the beginning of the music. The incense will come first. He'll fill the incense boat. When the incense moves out of the way, then you receive the blessing. And you don't kneel. You stand in front of the Archbishop and you bow just like you would with the priest. And you don't say, "Your blessing, Archbishop." You use the words from the Missal. You say, "Your blessing, Father." When you get to the ambo, you're welcome to chant the parts of the gospel if you wish. The Lord be with you. You can do that if you wish. You can do just the introductory and the concluding part. You can do that. Sing as much as you like. John Miller asks that if you're going to chant anything in the liturgy, don't decide the moment of that you're going to chant it. Decide earlier that day and maybe practice it a couple of times. Partly to spare yourself that moment of embarrassment when it doesn't come out quite right or the community has a hard time following. So just practice it. Make sure that you're ready to go. Remember that your hands are together when you say, "The Lord be with you." Even when the priest proclaims the gospel at a daily mass or something, his hands are supposed to be together because the proclamation of the gospel is properly ministerial. So it's properly the role of the deacon, not a presider's role. Now, a presider can proclaim the gospel, and he does, especially when he's by himself in the sanctuary. But it's a diaconal role, so his hands remain together, so would yours. The Lord be with you. The Archbishop at the end of the gospel wants to kiss the book of the gospels and give the blessing. So you'll probably follow the altar servers back with their candles all the way back to the Archbishop. Open up the book to the page that the gospel is on so that he can kiss the actual page. He'll close the book of the gospels, move out of the way so that he can bless the people with the book. And then he'll hand the book of the gospels back to you. And it's funny because this is the thing that I'm not thinking about because I'm concerned I need to get him his crozier, I need to get him his mitre. That's the moment when the deacon tends to have the deer in the headlights look of, "Oh no, what do I do with the book now?" So just be prepared. If he gives you the book of the Gospels, look like you know what you're doing and go put it on a side table, set it on the high altar, something like that, just to move it to the way. Don't stand there frozen because you don't know what to do with the book of the Gospels. And if it's just the lectionary, then you're the one who kisses it. So the Archbishop only kisses the Gospel if it's from the book of the Gospels. If it's the lectionary, which is going to be the case at funerals, it's going to be the case at daily masses, then after the proclamation of the gospel, you kiss it, you go back to your chair, and the Archbishop will go to the ambo. Setting the altar, this might be the most important section. Remember, I've given you this nice little diagram in the front, which I could probably describe everything with that. So in front of the Archbishop himself, on that corporal, all he wants is the paten and the chalice. That's it. And I put a little square around that chalice to remind you there's a pall. So if your parish has a pall, use it. Archbishop likes to use the pall. Just be familiar of when the pall is used and remove it for the epiclesis, before the epiclesis. So as right before his hands are to come down, remove the pall. And you know that it goes back on the chalice at the memorial acclamation. So basically, it's for the time that you're kneeling, the pall is off, and the time that you're standing, the pall is on. That's kind of the easy way of remembering it. But that's all that he wants in front of him. I guess you've got the purificator there at the side. It's okay if the missal is on top of the corporal a little bit like that. I'll usually be right there, or the MC will be right there to kind of adjust the missal for the archbishop, but you usually got a glass of water right there as well. But that's all he wants in front of him. If you have other sacred vessels, multiple ciboria, multiple chalices, purificators, those need to go on either one side or both sides of the altar on top of corporals. And I know that I don't know why this gets forgotten at parishes, but oftentimes we're just setting chalices along the altar. They're supposed to actually be on corporals. So you can have those on either end or just one end. Either is fine. Yes?
Would you say that part of the germ or is that part of your
germ? Ooh. Now I don't know. I think that's germ. I think if the thing's supposed to, and there's a theological meaning for it to be on top of the corporal, and the practical purpose of it, if there's anything to spill, it's caught by the corporal. I was even looking at the germ the other day, and it specifically says that there should be a white cloth on top of the altar as your topmost cloth. And I know sometimes parishes, because it's Advent or Lent, they got a purple cloth on top. But there's also supposed to be a white one on top of that. There's always supposed to be white on top. And so there's little things that just sometimes get forgotten. So please just bring out extra corporals to have those set out. Now I know that you might want to go back to your pastor and say, Father, we've been doing this wrong. You shouldn't have corporals over here. Or we should have corporals over here. And just be prudent in having that conversation. Have them call me or the liturgy office. Because I know that sometimes priests, they think that they've been doing it right for so many years, and they've actually been doing it wrong, and they don't take criticism that well. It happens. We're human. And so if you think that that's not going well or not going to go well, then maybe have have them speak with the archdiocese, and we can fill them in on that. Archbishop's specific request. Oh, was there something else? Yes, Deacon. If it's just one extra chalice, it would still go on a side corporal. Yep.
He may also want, is the patch supposed to be on the top corporal?
Yeah, I think that's a nice way of doing things. Let the archbishop be the one who places things on the corporal. So as you're setting the altar, well, before the gifts come down the aisle, have the corporal set out, set the paten and the chalice down off the side, because you haven't filled the chalice yet anyway. Wait for the archbishop to do the offertory. Let him offer up the bread and let him be the one who sets it on the corporal. That's a good point. And the same thing with the chalice. Archbishop asks that as much as possible, rather than having all of the wine come up in the procession, this is something that should probably be communicated with the pastors, not just with you guys. But he would like to have all of the chalices filled with wine and and watered. What's the word I'm trying to think of for that? Yeah, there we go. With just a little drop of water, to do that before Mass. Have those ready to go so that we're bringing filled chalices to the altar. There's a part of him that doesn't like waiting for chalices to be filled, and so he wants to kind of keep things moving. So his preference, if possible, is to have the chalices already filled with wine in the sanctuary. You can still have come down in the procession maybe a cruet of wine for the filling of the principal chalice. And all of the hosts for the liturgy, but when it comes to those extra chalices, have them ready to go before Mass so that all you have to fill and intinct is the principal chalice. Yes, Deacon. If there's concelebrants, usually in the parish there's only a couple of concelebrants, so yeah, have a little extra wine in the principal chalice. Archbishop would like that chalice to be rather full, you know, at least half full. I know that's kind of vague because chalices are different sizes, but to have it sufficient for if there's a couple of priests, make sure that the couple of priests and yourself can receive from the principal chalice. Be ready to accompany the archbishop to receive the gifts. So just kind of keeping an eye. I know and this is probably why if the deacon is filling chalices while the gifts are coming up, then the deacon obviously can't go accompany the archbishop to receive the gifts. And so just to be aware, you're accompanying the archbishop. He will hand you the wine and the water first because he wants you to go take care of that chalice. He'll hand the servers and the MC the ciboria, but he wants you on the chalice right away. So you don't have to wait for all the gifts to come up. As soon as he hands you the wine and the water, then head over to the chalice and we'll take care of the rest. Yes?
Is it possible that just a celibate host would come up and
protect the I suppose that's possible. The question was, can just the celebrant's host come up? It's not too much of a problem to bring up all of the ciboria. Even if there's five or six of them, that's not usually a big deal as long as you have a couple servers. So I would say, the paten, the large host, is going to be with the chalice, hopefully. Yeah. So that wouldn't need to come up in the procession. It would just be the rest of the host. Does that make sense?
We bring the large host up in the
procession. Okay, with the rest of the host. Okay. That's fine. That's fine. Because until everything's on the altar, he's not offering anything anyway. So that should be fine if the large host comes up in the procession as well. Yes? The corporal should be off of the altar when the mass is not happening. So, and really it should be off of the altar when it's not the liturgy of the Eucharist. So, have the altar cleared of all corporals until we're setting. I'm trying to think, at the cathedral, do we have the side corporals?
We set aside.
We usually have the side corporals. Okay. So I would say if the cathedral does it that way, then you can leave the side corporals. But when he kisses the altar, there should be nothing but the main linen for the altar. And then after communion, fold up that corporal and send it back with the chalice. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Some churches have a big host.
Yeah.
And then there's like 2.25 acres.
Yeah.
You have more than 2 celebrants. Usually put a couple
of the small ones. Yeah, that's fine. The archbishop. I would say generally, like I like the practice that they have here at the seminary. The question was, what if you have just the small large hosts, the like the 2.5, 2.25 inch size ones? The practice they have here at the seminary is the celebrant has a whole host to himself, and concelebrants each get half. And I think it's kind of a good way of going about it. So if you have 2 concelebrating priests, then they would get a large host to split between the two of them, and the archbishop would have one by himself. I think that's kind of a good policy. But really, you can have just the one large host. And if you can have as many concelebrants as you want, the only thing that's important is that they receive hosts that they have just consecrated. So they can't receive a host from the tabernacle. They have to receive communion from a host that they have just consecrated in that liturgy. So just if there's only that one host in front and you've got a lot of ciboria, keep your eye on which ciboria have just been consecrated, and make sure that those are the ones that you're taking to the concelebrating priests, as that is their requirement. Any other questions on setting the altar? Yes, the archbishop, if you've got lids on your ciboria, get rid of them, put them off to a side table. Less clutter on the altar, the better. When incensing, all I did was copy-pasted the germ paragraph 277. The priest, having put incense into the thurible, blesses it with the sign of the cross without saying anything. And you know he's going to, at this point in the liturgy, the celebrant incenses the gifts, he incenses the altar, and then he hands off the thurible to the deacon. So Archbishop just to make sure that you know what you're doing when you're holding the incense. So before and after an incensation, a profound bow is made to the person or the object that is incensed. So this would be the same thing when you're incensing the Book of the Gospels. You even bow to the Book of the Gospels as you incense it. 3 swings of the thurible are used to incense. So in our diocese, that would mean 3 swings of 3. 3 threes. 3 in the middle, 3 to the left, 3 to the right. That's sufficient for incensing of any person or any object, pretty much. I didn't highlight that last paragraph of the germ 277, doesn't really apply to you too much. Two swings of a thurible are used to incense relics and images of the saints, which is only done at the beginning of a celebration. So let's say it's the feast of Mother Teresa, and we have a relic of Mother Teresa out at the church. Then the celebrant is the one incensing that image or those relics, and he's supposed to only use two swings. But that doesn't apply to you, because you're probably never going to be incensing an image or a relic during the liturgy. The celebrant always will be. So for you, it's always three swings of three. And there's kind of a hierarchical reality. If you have concelebrating priests, incense the priests. If you've got a few deacons, why not? Incense the deacons as well, and then incense the people. Any questions on incense? Yes? The choir would be with the rest of the people. Yeah, they would. It would be the incense, one incensing for all of the people in the pews. So you can just go to the center of the saint. Even if you're just incensing down the center aisle, a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right, that covers everybody. So, okay. The Eucharistic prayer. Make sure that during the Eucharistic prayer, you're standing close. I want you to be able to see the book. When I was a deacon, I always positioned myself so that I could see over the celebrant's arm. I could see the book and kind of follow along. And that way, yes, you're out of the way. And he's not going to smack you with his arms. Archbishop keeps his hands in pretty close, actually. But also, just that you're there peripherally, so that he knows you're right there. He has this little frustration of when it gets to the doxology for the elevation. If the deacon isn't moving in to grab the chalice, he's going to move on without you. He's going to pick up that chalice and he's going to do it himself. So if he can see you, he knows that you're right there. He knows that you're paying attention. So stand close. And that, as the MC, you'll notice I stand really close to the Archbishop. It took a little while to get used to that for me. But I need to be close enough to turn the pages. But just to be close to him. If there's incense, the other deacon, the deacon of the word, may incense at the elevations. You're welcome to do that in the parishes. You can ask the MC if it's at your parish if he wants you to do that. Normally, you would go down with a couple of servers who are holding candles. You would kneel, and you would incense at both the elevation of the host and the cup. Deacon?
If we do that, do we get up and move out as soon as the deacons arrive at the second elevation?
No. You wait until the people stand. Yeah, wait until the great amen, everyone stands up, and then you move back. Yeah, so you would move into position during the holy. Yeah, and then you would move back, and then you would just go back to your place behind the deacon, behind the celebrant on the left side. I already mentioned this. Know when there is a pall on the chalice when to move it. You place it on after the offering of the chalice. Remove it at the epiclesis, put it back on for the memorial acclamation, and remove it for the doxology. And pick up the chalice yourself for the doxology. The Archbishop is not going to hand it to you. So the Archbishop's just going to grab the paten, and he's expecting that you're swinging in and grabbing the chalice. So remove the pall, grab the chalice, and we'll be good. Sign of peace. Archbishop says, make sure that you're using the proper words from the missal. I don't remember the words changing from the old translation. I thought they're the same from the old translation. Yeah, he just says, make sure that they're using the exact words. Not let us offer each other a sign of Christ's peace. That's nice, but that's also not the words in the book. The words in the book are let us offer each other the sign of peace. And whenever the Archbishop has concelebrants, he will give the sign of peace to the priest first and then to the deacons. At communion, the Archbishop asks, and this just really keeps things moving easily, and the MC should be on top of this, making sure that the deacons move to the Archbishop's right side so that he can give communion immediately to the deacons, both on the right side. He doesn't want to do one deacon on this side and then move this side. Just to be side by side, it's easier for him. And then he can grab the chalices that are hopefully on this edge of the altar as well. And he'll hand a side chalice to each of you. Deacon?
With the pall, after the doxology,
And then you put it back on. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, so after the doxology, you put the pall back on the chalice. Well, actually, Archbishop will remove it to receive communion himself. And so, at that point, I guess I don't worry too much about the pall. I, because while communion is going on, I'm going to be the one purifying the chalice usually, because the deacons and the priests are distributing communion. So as the MC, I'm usually the one purifying the principal chalice. So, but yeah, it would go on after the doxology, and at that point the archbishop will remove it to put the host, the broken piece of the host in there and receive communion. Receiving communion, you're on the right, archbishop's right side. He will hand the deacons the chalices of the precious blood from the side. And then the archbishop then goes to the servers. And hopefully the servers are behind you. My job as MC is to make sure we get the servers back behind the deacons so that they're right there to receive communion. So he'll ask then that you help to distribute the cup then to the altar servers that are with them. Direct traffic, because it's funny, Archbishop doesn't like to show up to things too early, which makes it a little bit difficult for us MCs. I remember we went to Our Lady Guadalupe not too long ago, and that was such a beautiful liturgy, but I had never been in there. And we had, I think, something like 9 altar servers. It was fun. But it was also a little stressful because I didn't know what I was doing. I got 10 minutes. And so I didn't have enough time to ask enough questions of how does the flow of communion work. And I hadn't really gotten comfortable in the space yet. But as the deacon at that parish, you are comfortable with that space. You do know where the Eucharistic ministers come up, and you do know where the altar servers come up. So at that point, we definitely, as MCs, need your help in kind of directing traffic. And if that means pointing the archbishop to where the Eucharistic ministers are standing or to the servers are standing, that would be extremely helpful. Otherwise, if you're not directing traffic, then I'm just going to make a decision and I'll just tell the archbishop, "Archbishop, you're going to distribute communion over here." And that may not be the normal place where the celebrant distributes communion. But I just to make things move and so the archbishop doesn't look lost because I'm trying to make him look good, I'm just going to tell him what to do. One of the only things, only time in my job I ever get to tell the archbishop what to do is in the liturgy. And normally, as the deacon of liturgy, you would distribute the precious blood at the archbishop's communion line. So if the archbishop switches sides, then I would say you also switch sides. Distribute communion on his side. Any questions about that section? Okay. Reposition of the Blessed Sacrament. In Denver, we often genuflect while reposing the Blessed Sacrament. You repose it before you close the tabernacle door, genuflect. Everyone else in the sanctuary who is already standing will bow. If the archbishop is seated, he often remains seated. He won't get up to bow during the reposition. But if things are moving along and it looks like you're already moving towards the tabernacle, he'll probably stay standing and bow. It's interesting. The germ does not call for this. The germ only calls for 3 genuflections, I think, in the liturgy for the priest. Both elevations and right before he receives communion. And so there are not supposed to be any other genuflections during the liturgy. So the germ doesn't call for this, but it seems to be a pious tradition within the archdiocese that this is how it's done. So just to be prepared for that. So I think it's okay that you do that. It's just interesting that it's something that we even the archbishop, if I've seen the archbishop propose, and he will genuflect too, but the germ doesn't call for it. So it's the one thing on here that I feel like does deviate a little bit from the book. Was there a question over here? Okay, I thought I saw him. Oftentimes, if there's several vessels, chalices, ciboria, the archbishop is going to ask that you purify after Mass. And that just kind of keeps things moving again. Archbishop, sometimes he can preach a little bit long, but he wants to keep his Mass within 1 hour still. And he's done a really good job of that at the cathedral. We got him a clock at the cathedral hidden on the backside of the pillar by his chair. And since we got the clock, seriously, since we got the clock, his Masses have been 1:05, 1:07. It's been amazing. And but he's very conscious of that. And he's always, that's partly why he wants to keep things moving. And as the MCs were the ones hearing about, keep things moving, help the deacon out. Why is it taking so long? So if there's several vessels, if there's only a few, if all you have is a ciboria and 2 chalices, then we'll probably just purify during the liturgy like you normally do. The MC might help you out just to kind of keep it moving a little bit. But if there's several, like I know at Immaculate Heart of Mary and Cabrini, we've got 16 vessels on this altar. We're definitely purifying after Mass. The Archbishop wants to remind you that it is your responsibility to make sure that vessels are purified. So as inconvenient as that is to process out with the Archbishop and then run back to the sacristy to go purify before people go wash the vessels, As inconvenient as that is, the Archbishop does ask that you take care of that. At the dismissal, remember there's going to be, there's oftentimes a solemn blessing, and that would be the blessing that's at the back of the ordinary in the Roman Missal, and it's the threefold blessings. Remember that the phrase is bow down for the blessing. We no longer say bow your head and pray for God's blessing. This is the only translation that we use. And it comes after the Archbishop says, the Lord be with you and with your spirit. Bow down for the blessing. I watched it happen the other day where the priest turned to the deacon and asked the deacon to say bow down for the blessing before he said the Lord be with you. So your priest may do it wrong. I'm sorry. but the Archbishop, it comes after the Lord be with you. Now, if there's no solemn blessing, which would mean that it's not coming from the book, the Archbishop will often do the pontifical blessing, the threefold, and I actually wrote it in here for you. The Lord be with you and with your spirit. Blessed be the name of the Lord, now and forever. Our help is in the name of the Lord, who made heaven and earth. And then he gives you the blessing. When he's using the pontifical blessing, there is no phrase, bow down for the blessing. You just go straight through the pontifical. So you'll know if the altar server is holding the book for the blessing, that's when you need to say bow down for the blessing. If there's no server holding the book, then it's probably just going to be the pontifical. You don't have to say it. Archbishop asks that you be really familiar with those responses. I know it's hard if you don't see the Archbishop that often to have them memorized. But have them memorized partly because nobody in your parish knows these phrases. And we need somebody in the sanctuary help leading those responses. So if you could turn on your microphone, that would be great. And to just to be the one really leading the community in those responses. Normally the Archbishop will go straight to the altar, kiss the altar, and then turn around right there at the altar and genuflect. Doesn't matter how your parish does it, he will usually do it that way. So just be aware that he's not going to walk around to the front of the altar and genuflect. He's just going to do it right there at the altar. Some miscellaneous stuff. On occasion, we might bring you a dalmatic. That seems pretty rare, but sometimes if it's a really huge feast at your parish and the Archbishop, we have special vestments where the dalmatic matches the chasuble. So we might bring you a dalmatic in certain situations. Or if it's Gaudete Sunday, then we might bring a pink rose dalmatic for you. And Metropolitan Cross, I already mentioned that we'll often bring that when the Archbishop comes to your parish. Please remind all altar servers and ministers, just in general, that you genuflect when you're in the sanctuary. We've been discussing this a little bit at the cathedral in the last week, of making sure that all ministers who are passing through the sanctuary have real reverence when they're in the sanctuary. It's hard because at the cathedral, if anyone wants to see the priest or the deacon, they got to go through the sanctuary to go see them and to get to the sacristy. And sometimes our ministers, and even ourselves, can get a little lazy about it and do like a hasty genuflection or not really genuflect, or we're talking in the sanctuary. So just to kind of really encourage a greater solemnity in the sanctuary, remind people to genuflect when they're passing by the tabernacle, except during Mass. During Mass, there's not supposed to be genuflections. You genuflect at the beginning of the liturgy and when you're leaving the sanctuary. Other than that, you bow when you walk by the tabernacle. Or you bow when you walk by, actually, I believe the German says you bow when you walk by the altar. And if you ever have to walk in front of the Archbishop, you bow to the Archbishop as you pass him by. Was that your question? Sure. And again, don't be nervous. I've already skipped a little section. During Mass, sometimes the Archbishop's going to hand you items. It's funny. I wish I had a third hand, because there's some days where I'm the only altar server, and I have to hand him his mitre, his crozier, his glasses, and a glass of water, all in a matter of 10 seconds. And so he may occasionally just hand off to you without saying anything his glasses, his homily, his mitre, who knows what. Have unassuming authority, act like you know what to do with the mitre, and hold it anyway. Just be confident with it. Again, help direct the altar servers. Generally, that's the MC's job, to keep the altar servers moving. They get really nervous, especially if there's anything that has changed about what they practice. If they've processed it and now they put a cross in a different place in the altar than they usually do, they're totally thrown off and they're really nervous. So just to help the altar servers along. Again, bow in front of the Archbishop. When he's seated in his chair, don't be nervous. Have that unassuming authority. John Miller asks again that you would just reread things. Reread the germ It's really good, I promise. Reread some of the instructions for the rite of funerals, the rite of baptisms. You've been doing them for so long, you probably know it all, but you might find something in there that you'd missed. You might find something that kind of elevates the way that you've been doing it. Make sure you memorize your deacon parts, and that they're the exact same as the ones printed in the missal. The two the Archbishop pointed out specifically were that he sees deacons using a different translation of the sign of peace and a different translation or a different version of the dismissal. So there's only, I think, three or four versions of the dismissal. Make sure that you know those four and are only using those four. There's not multiple. It no longer says in these or similar words. It gives you the options, and these are the words that you have as your choices. And again, my job as the MC is to make the Archbishop look good, but it's also to make you look good and to make the liturgy look smooth. So hopefully nobody notices when little things are forgotten or something like that. So if you've got questions, ask questions, and just be ready to think one step ahead. So, questions? Deacon Carr.
Are the all the rites updated? Because some of them still have their work.
Right, yeah. So... none of the rites have been updated yet. Rite of marriage, I believe, is going to be the next coming out, and that's still not in any, it doesn't seem to be in any rush. But none of them have been updated quite yet. But for the ordinary parts, so like the Lord be with you, the response will still be in with your spirit, even though the old translation of your baptismal rite will still say, and also with you. You would still, we just say the word of the Lord at the end of the reading, where the old translation says, "This is the word of the Lord." I think that's especially in the ritual books. So yeah, where those parts, where the ordinary parts haven't been translated, then we're presumed that we need to be using the new translation of those things. But hopefully we get new rites here soon in the next few years. We'll see.
Going back to when you had a bishop there,
I meant to look this up before I came, because I seem to remember about 4 years ago a formal declaration saying that the Book of the Gospels is not to be displayed near the ambo after the proclamation of the gospel. I know a lot of parishes do this, and that's why I intended to look this up before I came here today, because I figured this question would come up. I feel bad that I don't know it. I'll try to look it up. Actually, I don't have anything to one. I'll see if I can look something up and at least get a word back to Deacon Joe maybe before your guys' day ends. But my understanding is that it shouldn't be displayed. At the cathedral, we move it up to the high altar, but it's out of the way. We're not using the high altar at all during the liturgy, so it's still out of the way. The reason why I think of it is because the parish where I was as a seminarian, when this declaration came out, it was shortly thereafter that I noticed that they had moved it so that you were then displaying it right in front of the ambo. And I don't remember them doing that before. And so I will look into that and have a final word for you on that soon. So, yeah, and if I don't get it to you today, then I'll email Mary, and Mary will blast it out to all of you. So I'll have an actual answer to that question. Yeah.
Father, should there be a cross on the altar?
The Archbishop would like to have a cross on the altar, at least. There should be a cross on the altar. There should be a cross for the people to see, and there should be a cross for the priest to see. It could be flat. Yeah, absolutely. That would be absolutely fine. I noticed the other day when we were at Guardian Angels, they've got a cross in the sanctuary on the wall for the people. And so as normal, we put the Metropolitan cross in front of the altar facing the people. But they already had a crucifix to look at, and the Archbishop didn't have one. So during the liturgy, he had me walk over there and sneakily flip the crucifix around so that he had a cross to look at. And so just to make sure that there is a crucifix on the altar for the Archbishop to look at in prayer during the liturgy would be great.
When people are moving around in the sanctuary, are you bound to the altar, the crucifix, or the tabernacle?
It's a good question. I'm almost certain that you have to bow to the altar. Yeah, you bow to the altar, not to the tabernacle. Now that's why I generally, because usually your parish is the tabernacle's against the wall in the center, and your altar's in the center. So I cheat by just crossing in front of the altar, and then you bow. You're bowing to both of them, because honestly, it feels funny to me to cross in between and bow to the altar with my back to the Eucharist. It feels kind of strange to me. So I prefer to cross in front of the altar, bow to both of them. Because it used to be that the two were together. You were always celebrating Mass at the high altar. And so when you bowed, you were bowing to the altar. You were also bowing to the tabernacle. You were also bowing to the cross. They were always all together. So it's a little more confusing now that we've separated the three. But it should be bowing to the altar and bowing to the bishop whenever you cross in front of either one of them. Okay, Deacon.
Tincture of the secondary chalices, is that to be done by a deacon, or can a sacrist do that?
It should be done by a deacon. Yeah. I really think it should be done by a deacon, since it's given to the deacon or the priest in the ordinary of the missal.
Plus those secondary chalices being tincture, or only the principal ones?
There's a question. My understanding, if it really came down to it, the principal chalice has to be for validity, but the side chalices don't have to be. However, I believe that it's particular law that we have to be intincting all of the side chalices, all of the side wine. That's my understanding of it. But yeah, for sure, because there was a little bit of debate. I'm trying to think back to Thomas Aquinas. Thomas debates, is it necessary for validity to have a little drop of water in there? And I think that his answer was that chalice, it's necessary. It's necessary, but it may not keep it from being valid. I can't remember, but just as practice, please intinct all chalices. It should be done that way, just in general. But I think it's okay if something happens and you didn't intinct the side chalice. It's not the end of the world. We're okay. But please just try to do it. I think it's still necessary. Yeah.
At the beginning of the liturgy,
you can have the stand for it already on the altar. Yeah.
I guess I'm not understanding the question.
Yes. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. So the deacon, when the deacon comes up enthroned, yes, set the book of the Gospels on the altar, step to the side, and wait for the bishop to kiss. Yeah. You can just stay up there. Did that answer your question? Okay. He seems to be indifferent when it comes to bells, so either way is fine. I noticed at the cathedral we're not using bells at all during Lent, and that's okay. So he's never said anything one way or the other when it comes to bells. Yeah.
In terms of communion, the archbishop would receive from his chalice, because consecrating celebrants, they would then receive from that chalice as well.
Normally.
In the meantime, does the archbishop take one of the side chalices?
So what will happen, the archbishop receives communion and he immediately turns to give communion to both of the deacons. While he's doing that, the concelebrating priests are coming to the principal chalices, they're receiving there, and the deacons are receiving from the side chalices. Then that's fine. Yeah, you can intinct the decanter. Just in general, your parishes. Again, the archbishop would rather you have chalices already pre-filled, but in your parishes, you should be intincting before and pouring. Remember, pouring the decanter into chalices before the consecration. You should never be pouring consecrated precious blood from the decanter into the chalices. But yeah, you can intinct the whole flagon before filling the chalices.
Do we need to wait for him to finish the offering of the bread, or does he care?
Nope, you can be doing that while he's offering the bread. Yeah.
And then, as far as the ministers of communion are concerned, when do they receive in that whole process?
They would be after the deacon. After the deacon receives communion, they should already be in the sanctuary. The extraordinary ministers, yeah. And so if you would just direct him to where they are, and if they should receive first. One of the concelebrating priests or yourself could give communion to the servers. It's probably more important than just the direct info where the Eucharistic ministers are. Sorry, extraordinary ministers of Holy Communion.
So he would do that with the Eucharist and the precious blood. Would you follow with that?
You would, exactly. You would follow with the chalice that you've just received. Yep.